Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. A red flag warning is in effect due to extreme fire danger. Get details on today's show about what you should know to stay safe. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some top national news stories, including allegations that a Washington Post journalist was murdered by Saudi Arabia inside a Saudi embassy, plus information on Medicare signups and more. On our Capitol Report, hear about severe cuts to Medicare and Medicaid proposed in House Republicans' budget. On People Power, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce is asking for your help to brighten this holiday season for homebound senior citizens. Plus, hear how the Grossmont Healthcare District is taking action to help homeless people and refugees in East County. If you're wondering why some local candidates, as well as Gavin Newsom, the Democratic nominee for governor, don't have ballot statements in your taxpayer-paid voting guide, we've got answers on today's show. And then on Crime Beat, the FBI wants you to be on the lookout for a robber responsible for two bank robberies in El Cajon. Plus, hear about a sexual predator dubbed bolder than most who will soon be released in Hukumba Hot Springs. On sports, hear about the battle for the Hamishaw Trophy between two East County schools and about a soccer matchup between San Diego State and UCLA. Our Sounds of History segment takes you aboard the Sentimental Journey, a World War II bomber plane out of Gillespie Field, along with two World War II pilots who recall being shot down and becoming prisoners of war. In Lakeside, hundreds of residents turned out at a recent meeting to oppose a sand mining project that is also strongly opposed by environmentalists and Native American tribes. Hear why on today's show. Padre Water District's board has voted to freeze water rates, and on our health report, hear about a startling rise in valley fever cases statewide. Learn about a gag order in a settlement agreement between the Alpine and Grossmont school districts that has silenced many critics of the Alpine High School. And finally, we'll have some home safety tips for you today. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Santa Ana winds gusting into our region along with falling humidity have prompted the National Weather Service to issue a red flag warning for high fire danger from 3 a.m. Monday to 8 p.m. Tuesday. Wind gusts of up to 70 miles an hour are possible, along with humidity dropping into the 5 to 10% range for some areas in the county. Among areas likely to experience strong winds are Julian, Mount Laguna, and Borrego. While the weekend's rain dampened the region, the National Weather Service cautions, fuels will dry quickly, and if fire ignition occurs, conditions are favorable for extreme fire behavior, which would threaten life and property. Please avoid outdoor burning. Travelers are also warned that strong winds could make driving difficult for high-profile vehicles such as motorhomes or SUVs. In addition, San Diego Gas and Electric Company has sent warnings to some rural residents in mountain areas to expect planned power outages to avoid having power lines spark fires. So be prepared. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October the 15th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Is the moral integrity of the U.S. at stake in the apparent murder of a Washington Post journalist? Also on the Monday rundown, a pair of reports as we head toward the midterm elections in November. Plus, if you're enrolling in Medicare today, help is on the way. First, here's our top story. Senator Marco Rubio said the U.S. moral integrity is undercut if its leaders do not criticize allies that they commit human rights violations. AOL reports Rubio was specifically referring to the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. That happened during an interview with NBC's Chuck Todd on Meet the Press. AOL notes that Khashoggi was a vocal critic of the Saudi crown prince. He disappeared over a week ago after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and there's widespread speculation he may have been murdered. Florida Panhandle officials in Mexico Beach, which is one of the communities hit hardest, told ABC News 46 people remain unaccounted for. Nearly 300 people, including 10 children, rode out the storm when it made landfall in the middle of last week. That's according to the town city clerk and mayor. And the expiration of the Farm Bill is putting the brakes on conservation programs important for many Illinois farmers and ranchers. Mary Sherman reports.
While the legislation largely stalled over the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the people who grow food and livestock also were impacted. Ryan Stockwell with the National Wildlife Federation says farmers like him currently are unable to apply for the Conservation Stewardship Program, which helps protect natural resources while improving profitability.
And in these economic times and the way that the commodity prices are for farmers right now, that's a really important program to have. But because of the expiration, farmers looking to sign up for that program are not able to do so. That just adds another challenge for farmers.
Stockwell adds that the Farm Bill gives farmers and ranchers the tools they need to protect waterways, support habitat and wildlife, and secure agricultural land for the next generation.
And finally, Andrea Sears tells us today is the first day of the open enrollment period for Medicare, and there's help for anyone signing up for the first time or making changes.
With mailboxes filled with ads for prescription drug plans and supplemental coverage, picking the right Medicare plans can be confusing, but it doesn't have to be. AARP New Hampshire is offering a free two-part webinar this week to help answer questions about which options are right for you. Todd Fahey, State Director for AARP, says choosing the right plans can make a big difference.
The webinar will help people make informed decisions, including when they should take this, maybe why they should take it, and help them navigate the complexities of this. It is not a simple process, and it will require a bit of work.
Fahey adds it's important to remember you've been paying for Medicare your entire working life through federal payroll deductions, so once you are eligible, he says it makes sense for you to enroll. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, Newsin and Cruisin', with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org. The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October the 15th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Is the moral integrity of the U.S. at stake in the apparent murder of a Washington Post journalist? Plus, if you're enrolling in Medicare today, help is on the way. First, here's our top story. Senator Marco Rubio said the U.S. moral integrity is undercut if its leaders do not criticize allies that they commit human rights violations. AOL reports Rubio was specifically referring to the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. That happened during an interview with NBC's Chuck Todd on Meet the Press. AOL notes that Khashoggi was a vocal critic of the Saudi crown prince. He disappeared over a week ago after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and there's widespread speculation he may have been murdered. This year's elections will be the first in which all of Utah's 29 counties offer Election Day registration at the polls. Catherine Davis Young reports advocates for the system are hoping for a smooth rollout.
If you show up to your polling place on November 6th and find your voter registration information is out of date or you haven't previously registered, you should be able to take care of it on the spot. Jason Stevenson with the ACLU of Utah says this is an important change, since Utah's rate of voter participation has been low compared to that of other states in recent elections.
That's because there's a lot of barriers to people getting out and voting. People's lives are complex. People move. People are deployed overseas. People even move within their neighborhood and they can end up in a different precinct and all of a sudden find that their names are off the voter roll.
A 2017 report from Nonprofit Vote and the U.S. Elections Project shows states that offer Election Day registration tend to see higher voter turnout. Stevenson is optimistic that that can happen in Utah if the program is rolled out effectively. An ACLU survey of county clerks' offices found not all were prepared for the new system.
With just 3 weeks until Election Day, advocates say there's still plenty of time for counties to promote voter education, train poll workers, and update their websites. Meantime, Tennessee is ranked 50th in the country in voter turnout, but that may change during the upcoming midterms. Here's Stephanie Carson to explain why.
The pursuit of clean energy is what drives groups such as the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. But this election season, the Alliance is working with dozens of volunteers across Tennessee to get out the vote. The group registered people across Tennessee and now has its sights set on turning folks out at the polls. Michael McMiller is a regional organizer in Memphis.
It can't be a half-hearted pursuit in order to make real change. We need everybody, all hands on deck. You can't complain about the results of the game if you don't check in at all.
Almost 38,000 people registered to vote on the deadline day alone last Tuesday, due in part to the boost from celebrity Taylor Swift weighing in on the midterms. The Alliance and its grassroots campaign, Renew Tennessee, will now plan 7 Election Day parties at polling stations across the state in an effort to increase voter turnout.
Tennessee also ranks 40th in voter registration. ABC 13 in Florida reports 4 days after Hurricane Michael pulverized the Florida Panhandle, officials in Mexico Beach, which was one of the communities hit hardest, told ABC News 46 people remain unaccounted for. Nearly 300 people, including 10 children, rode out the storm when it made landfall in the middle of last week. That's according to the town city clerk and mayor. And the expiration of the Farm Bill is putting the brakes on conservation programs important for many Illinois farmers and ranchers, Mary Sherman reports.
While the legislation largely stalled over the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the people who grow food and livestock also were impacted. Ryan Stockwell with the National Wildlife Federation says farmers like him currently are unable to apply for the Conservation Stewardship Program, which helps protect natural resources while improving profitability.
And in these economic times and the way that the commodity prices are for farmers right now, that's a really important program to have. But because of the expiration, farmers looking to sign up for that program are not able to do so. That just adds another challenge for farmers.
Stockwell adds that the Farm Bill gives farmers and ranchers the tools they need to protect waterways, support habitat and wildlife, and secure agricultural land for the next generation.
And finally, Andrea Sears tells us today is the first day of the open enrollment period for Medicare, and there's help for anyone signing up for the first time or making changes.
With mailboxes filled with ads for prescription drug plans and supplemental coverage, picking the right Medicare plans can be confusing, but it doesn't have to be. AARP New Hampshire is offering a free 2-part webinar this week to help answer questions about which options are right for you. Todd Fahey, State Director for AARP, says choosing the right plans can make a big difference.
The webinar will help people make informed decisions, including when they should take this, maybe why they should take it, and help them navigate the complexities of this. It is not a simple process, and it will require a bit of work.
Fahey adds it's important to remember you've been paying for Medicare your entire working life through federal payroll deductions. So once you are eligible, he says it makes sense for you to enroll. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, Newsin and Cruisin, with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Capitol Report. A budget proposed by House Republicans would cut Medicare, the federal health care program for senior citizens and the disabled, by $537 billion. That violates a campaign promise made by Donald Trump when he was running for president and pledged, "Republicans believe that a Medicare program that was created for seniors and paid for by seniors their entire lives should always be protected and preserved." But this budget, if enacted, would take away those protections. The budget not only has deep cuts in the Medicare program, it also imposes new caps expected to result in cuts in premium payments to senior citizens. In addition, it moves toward a system of private health insurance plans as alternatives, The Hill reports. It would also slash Medicaid and other health programs, many for the poor, by $1.5 trillion. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan has long been pushing to create a Medicare exchange where seniors would get a set premium that they could choose to use for private insurance coverage. While choice may sound desirable, it only works if the funds seniors receive from the government are enough to cover the costs of policies, and if coverage is adequate to cover seniors' medical needs. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that those premiums provided by the government won't be nearly enough to cover health care costs. By 2030, recipients of Medicare would receive less than a third of what the federal plan currently pays, with retirees forced to pay the other two-thirds, the Congressional Budget Office estimates. There's also no guarantee that private companies' policies would cover as much as Medicare covers, or that pre-existing conditions wouldn't be excluded. The primary benefits of the proposal, it appears, would be to insurance companies. The budget also has deep cuts in programs to alleviate poverty, help education, and more. Democrats blasted the proposal, which the ranking member of the House Budget Committee, Congressman John Yarmuth, says will inflict serious harm on American families. Republicans tout fiscal responsibility in advocating for the budget cuts, but the Republicans' recently enacted tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans drastically increased the federal deficit, providing tax relief for millionaires and large corporations at the expense of seniors and the disabled if the proposed budget is approved.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to join them and make a difference in the lives of La Mesa homebound seniors. The Chamber is gathering items now through November 30th to give along with a hot turkey dinner and all of the trimmings to 24 seniors delivered by the La Mesa Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol. Chamber President Mary England says the Chamber plans to make this holiday special for these wonderful members of our community. Suggested items to donate include canned soups, canned fruits and vegetables, packets of crackers, pasta or macaroni and cheese, soaps, toothpaste and other toiletries, pads or paper, and pens, or gift cards from retailers such as grocery stores or Target. Please make sure that any food items donated are not expired. England adds, if you have another item you believe will put a smile on their faces, by all means, drop them off. Donated items can be dropped off by November 30th at the La Mesa Chamber's office during business hours. You can find the La Mesa Chamber online at lamesachamber.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Jonathan Getz. The Grossmont Healthcare District is continuing its support of community organizations that help homeless and refugee groups in East County with recent grants to Crisis House and Survivors of Torture International. A $6,500 grant to Crisis House will help the El Cajon-based organization present Project Homeless Connect East County, a one-day event that will provide services to homeless individuals and families. Launched in 2013, the collaborative effort involves more than 35 organizations to provide free services including haircuts, clothing, ID paperwork, legal help, medical checkups, pastoral counseling, addiction treatment, housing, and employment assistance. Crisis House was founded in 1970 to offer comprehensive housing and social services for the region's homeless and low-income populations. Executive Director Mary Case says, with the help of Grossmont Healthcare District, we will have the opportunity to again make healthcare accessible and provide health-related services to an underserved and high-risk population. Case says the goal of Project Homeless Connect is to break the cycle of homelessness and poverty, making it easier for homeless people and families to access necessary services to rebuild their lives and to stay safe, healthy, and self-sufficient. The next Project Homeless Connect is scheduled for April 12, 2019 in El Cajon. Crisis House anticipates that next year's event will deliver services to as many as 225 unsheltered homeless men, women, and children. Case says the organization wants to expand services by making both vision and dental available at the event. Grossmont Healthcare District's board also recently approved a $2,500 sponsorship to Survivors of Torture International for its 8th annual Helping Survivors Heal Luncheon set for September 20th in Mission Valley. Survivors of Torture, a San Diego nonprofit, assists adult and child refugees and asylum seekers who have fled from over 80 countries where political torture and ethnic cleansing are common threats. The organization offers free medical, dental, psychiatric, psychological, and other social services, as well as employment, education, and legal referrals. Top home countries of origin among clients include Iraq, Iran, Syria, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Mexico. Kathy Anderson, Executive Director of Survivors of Torture, says, "Our mission is to facilitate the healing of survivors and their families and advocate for the abolition of torture," says Anderson, who also thanks Grossmont Healthcare District for its support.
If you've received your official voter information pamphlet from the state, you may be wondering why Gavin Newsom, the Democratic nominee for governor, doesn't have a ballot statement, and why do some candidates for local offices have them and others don't. The key reason, it turns out, is money. There's a cost for ballot statements, which is prohibitive for candidates with low incomes. And conversely, campaign finance laws in California keep even well-funded candidates from being able to have their statements published in official voter information pamphlets produced by the state. In Newsom's case, California law forbids gubernatorial candidates who don't accept campaign spending limits of $14.5 million from buying a ballot statement. Newsom has spent over $21 million. That's more than double his Republican opponent, John Cox. So Cox has a ballot statement, and Newsom does not. But that rule amounts to censorship of information for voters to easily access information in mailers that we as taxpayers are funding. For many local candidates in smaller races, the cost of a ballot statement is a barrier. East County Magazine was asked this election cycle by two candidates who lacked funds for a ballot statement to help them get word out about their candidacy. One was running for an unpaid position on a community planning group, the other for a fire board. We responded in all fairness by publishing information on all of the candidates in those races. But why should media be the last resort option to educate voters when government denies poor candidates the right to equal space in your ballot book? What if local media gets overwhelmed with candidate requests in many races? In East County, there are 52 races on the ballot, and it would be impossible to cover them all. Perhaps it's time for our state and local governments to make ballot statements available free for all candidates. The current system favors wealthy candidates or those with special interest money over low-income people running for local races, especially in disadvantaged rural areas and inner-city neighborhoods. In important statewide races, all voters should arguably have the right to read a statement by every candidate on Election Day, regardless of how much was spent on campaigning elsewhere. After all, not everybody watches TV, where paid political ads are often run. Voters may mistakenly believe that a candidate with no ballot statement is careless, lazy, missed a deadline, or is hiding what they stand for. Current law focuses on the obligations of candidates, but fails to address the rights and needs of voters to be informed equally about everyone on their ballots, regardless of a candidate's ability to pay. Imposing fees also favors those with access to special interest funding at the expense of many running solely with their community's best interests at heart. If fees for ballot statements are eliminated, especially for local races where many positions are unpaid, then voters would have equal access to all candidates' messages in government-paid mailers before casting ballots. Candidates would still be free to use other avenues to reach voters, but voters would no longer open their official voter guide, only to find blank pages below some candidates' names. Ballot statements are still one of the most persuasive messages in campaigns, and in small local races especially, ballot statements may be the only information seen by many voters before they cast their votes. For government to favor some candidates over others in a taxpayer-paid voter guide by imposing financial or bureaucratic barriers is, in a word, undemocratic. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. The FBI and the San Diego Violent Crimes Task Force are seeking the public's help to identify a man who robbed two banks in El Cajon. The first robbery occurred September 14th at Mission Federal Credit Union on North Johnson Avenue, and the second heist was October 8th at the Wells Fargo Bank on Hamishaw Road. Surveillance photos show the robber wore a striped polo shirt and has a beard. He is white, about 50 to 60 years old, 6 feet tall, with a thin build. In both robberies, the robber passed the teller a threatening note stating he had a weapon and demanded money. If you have information, contact the San Diego FBI at 858-320-1800 or San Diego Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for a reward for information leading to a conviction. You can also post tips at sdcrimestoppers.org.
Judge David Gill on Friday approved the release of Alvin Quarles, a sexual predator dubbed Bolder Than Most, to a residence on Desert Ranch Road in Hakumba Hot Springs. The Department of State Hospitals plans Quarles' release to the site by November 30th. The ruling came despite protesters outside the courthouse and more than 30 people who came to court to oppose the release. Mary Taylor told the judge that her life has been haunted since Quarles sexually assaulted her 30 years ago, threatening to kill her and her female roommate if they did not do as he ordered. Quarles has a history of entering homes and attacking sleeping women at night point, sometimes ordering a victim's male partner to watch or participate. Quarles was sentenced to serve 50 years in prison for over a dozen sexual assaults. He later became eligible for parole in 2013, but was transferred to a state hospital and declared a sexually violent predator. His release is conditional and he will be monitored with a GPS device. If he violates terms of his release, he could be returned to Coalinga State Hospital. But that's not enough assurance for residents of Hakumba, where a prior predator released in the community later assaulted an elderly resident despite wearing an ankle bracelet. Supervisor Jacob issued a statement blasting the decision as cruel and misguided, adding, "It is sickening that families in Hakumba will soon have this serial rapist in their community." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alpert.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History.
They call them the Greatest Generation, and on October 1st, World War II veteran pilots reminisced about their combat flight experiences aboard a B-17 Warbird, aptly named Sentimental Journey. This peacetime flight out of El Cajon's Gillespie Field was offered by the Arizona Memorial Museum's staff and flight crew to local members of the press and public, and our reporter, Rebecca Jeffress Williamson, was on board. 95-year-old Bill Milton recalls, "I was on my 11th mission when I got shot down on a strafing run in Greece. I was coming in low to see if I could hit as many airplanes and buildings as possible, trying to hinder their ability to operate off their airfield." Milton was captured and became a prisoner of war, or POW. He was transferred from Greece to Stalagluft III in Germany, where he was imprisoned for 7 months. "Food was scarce," he recalls. "You were living in conditions where you were guarded all the time," continued Milton. Then General Patton reached the area with Allied troops, and Milton was rescued in April 1945. Fellow World War II pilot Ed Davidson, now 95, was a pilot on a B-17 when he was 19 years old. He recalls, "Everything happened in a couple of seconds. We were flying very low to the ground. Then ground fire took out my left engine." He too became a POW when he was shot down over occupied France on his 7th mission in January 1944. "The next day we went through Paris and then to Frankfurt, then to Barth," says Davison, who spent 16 months in Stalagluft I. "I spent my 21st birthday there," he recalls. "In April we started hearing the guns, so by May 1st, 1945, the Russians liberated us. They put 30 POWs on each B-17 and flew them to Allied military camps. We were at Camp Lucky Strike," he says, adding that each of the camps were named for cigarette brands. Debbie English is the adjutant and membership officer for Air Group 1, based out of Gillespie Field. She and her husband, Doug, were both on hand to greet the crew of the Sentimental Journey. She says they worked for 6 months to get the Arizona Commemorative Air Force Museum crew here, along with the Sentimental Journey B-17. Air Group 1 was formed as the San Diego Squadron of CAF in 1981. They were renamed Air Group 1 2 years later. They have a hangar and a World War II museum with a mission to keep history alive by restoring World War II aircraft, providing memorial flyovers at events, and a presence at local air shows. The organization brought the Sentimental Journey to the airport and offered rides for a fee in the rare B-17G Warbird, one of only 8 of this model left in the entire world. During the 25-minute air tour over East County, the roar of the engine, images of the propeller and the sky beyond induced an adrenaline rush and a sense of what it must have been like riding in this aircraft during wartime. But on this flight, passengers didn't have to fear being shot down by enemy aircraft or taken prisoner. As the Sentimental Journey landed, veteran Bill Milton called it a beautiful flight. If you would like to take a ride aboard the Sentimental Journey, the vintage airplane will be in Palm Springs until October 14th and in Bakersfield until October 21st. For more information or to purchase a ride, you can visit flyinglegendstour.com. To find out about future flight opportunities or to support Air Group 1, you can visit the Air Group 1 website at ag1caf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine's Sounds of History series, this is John Fisteer.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Members of San Diego County's planning and development staff faced some 500 irate lakeside residents at a loud and rowdy standing room only meeting at the Lakeside Community Center over a proposed sand mine project at the El Monte Valley. The recent meeting came on the heels of a controversial draft environmental impact report, or EIR, released by the county on environmental effects the sand mine project might have on the lakeside community and the adjacent cities of Santee and El Cajon. The public can submit written comments on the report through October 29th. The sand mining project is slated to occur on 228 acres of a 480-acre parcel. The project would dig up to 100 feet into the San Diego River riverbed to harvest 12 million tons of sand a year, generating 150 truck trips a day, 6 days a week, over 12 years. The meeting, which lasted nearly 3 hours, involved speaker after speaker who denounced the project, some using their allotted comment time to rally the audience. One speaker called out the owner of the land, Bill Adams, of El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC, which is the deceptively named title of the mining company. The speaker told Adams, "We're going to stop you. We're going to stand in front of your trucks and we're not going to let you through. You'll have to run over my body." Another speaker raved, "I don't know if you've noticed, but the whole town of Lakeside is here." Speakers at the meeting were supposed to talk for 2 minutes apiece, but some ignored that limit. County Planning Department Project Manager Ben Nelson asked the audience for no applause and no booing, to which a woman shouted back, "You're 2 years late with the report. You need to hear what we have to say." Lynn Collier told planners, "Many of our homes are directly down in the valley and will be 100% impacted by this project." Other speakers expressed concern that the sand dredging would affect the water table and possibly dry up nearby water wells. "Without well water, we cannot keep the horses, the pigs, the cows, never mind the people," one woman stated. Anger was also directed toward Michael Beck, who has two environmental organizations, Endangered Habitat League and Endangered Habitat Conservancy, involved with restoration of sand mines at Hanson Pond near the proposed El Monte project. Beck has reportedly partnered with El Monte Nature Preserve to secure a contract to restore the sand mine's land over 4 years, after all sand has been extracted. Beck is also a member of the county planning board. Although he has said he would recuse himself from the vote, some residents fear he could still wield influence. At the meeting, several people called for Supervisor Diane Jacob to ask Beck to resign. The EIR says that groundwater will not be used for the project and that water would be supplied by the Lakeside Water District. But Frank Hilliker, a board member on the Lakeside Community Planning Group, and Brett Sanders, general manager of the Lakeside Water District, both told East County Magazine that their district is not in line to sell water to the mining company. Sanders said bluntly, "We will not be selling water to the project, in spite of what the county is saying in their reports." The parcel of land proposed for the sand mining project was sold to El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC, for $8 million by the Helix Water District. The state of California has determined that the land is a critical resource for sand because of a shortage of high-quality sand in the county for use in highway and road construction. In an interview with the San Diego Union-Tribune published last year, Adams said, "We intend to work with the residents of Lakeside to complete trail systems and public access accommodations to be available on the property during and following the anticipated mining and restoration operations." The biggest impact, according to the EIR, is that the project will unavoidably and irrevocably impact scenic views and resources, also creating traffic and noise issues. The area is home to several endangered and threatened species, including bald eagles, golden eagles, glossy snakes, least bells vireos, California gnatcatchers, and Kino checker spot butterflies that cannot be found anywhere else in the world. Environmental groups, including Cleveland National Forest Foundation and Lakeside River Park Foundation, have voiced concerns over the project and spoken with residents about mounting a possible legal challenge in the future. Valley fever is another serious risk. Many speakers raised concerns over steps the owner would be required to take to reduce that risk, since disturbing surface soils could increase exposure of spores that cause valley fever in the surrounding communities. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, about 10,000 cases are reported in the United States each year, mostly from Arizona and California. Valley fever can be misdiagnosed because its symptoms are similar to those of other illnesses. According to Grossmont Hospital Emergency Room Director Julie Phillips, M.D., most people are not typically physically affected by valley fever when the spores are kicked up into the air in clouds of dust. Most people handle the fungal spores really well, and at the most, only go through quickly treatable mild infections. But it can be a totally different story for people with serious autoimmune diseases, she continued. The symptoms commonly include fatigue, cough, fever, shortness of breath, headache, night sweats, muscle aches or joint pain, and skin rash on the upper regions of the body and legs. But in some patients, severe infections can spread to other parts of the body, such as the lung or brain, requiring antifungal treatment and hospitalization. Rarely, valley fever can lead to meningitis and can be fatal, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. Last year, 7,466 new cases of valley fever were diagnosed in California, the highest year on record, the California Department of Public Health reports. Nationally, the CDC reports 200 people die each year on average from valley fever. Many domestic animals, including dogs, cats, horses, cattle, and llamas, can contract valley fever, as well as wildlife species found in the El Monte Valley, ranging from skunks to cougars, according to the University of Arizona Health Sciences. Dr. Roland Wolkowitz, a widely recognized San Diego State University professor and scientist in virology and microbiology, says, "It is difficult to get the number of cases with this disease because its symptoms are similar to other inflammatory diseases of the respiratory tract." He adds that the fungus exists in the first 2 to 10 inches of soil, and he observes, "The more dry the air is, there is more chances that these particles are transported by the winds. With climate change, you have higher temperatures." Dr. Wolkowitz adds, "When soil is disturbed by construction, spores are released into the air." Besides increased traffic and environmental health concerns raised by the project, a formidable challenge that the project could face now are cultural and historical concerns being raised by Borona and Kumeyaay Native American tribes. Tribal members say that the El Monte Valley is a spiritual area for the tribes, which still has numerous artifacts and burial sites and is considered sacred land. Tribes were removed from the land before the El Capitan Dam and Reservoir were built in 1935. Bobby Wallace, a member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians in Lakeside, explains that the tribe split in two and was relocated in Barona and Viejas and had to start over on bare land. The people of the Hohkenstock lived in these areas for over 10,000 years before Europeans came, he points out. Wallace told planners at the crowded Lakeside meeting, "There's going to be some of my people, my relatives, my family, stuff that is going to be lost at the end of this. Digging it up and tearing it up is disrespectful to me and disrespectful to all tribes." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Liz Albert with ECM Friday Night Lights on KNSJ Radio. It happens every year. The Cougars made their way up the hill from Campa Road to Hillsdale Road for a battle to claim the street that unites them both. Week 8 of ECM Friday Night Lights brings you the mid-season East County Classic, the Battle for the Hamisaw Trophy. It's been a year since Thomas Fishburne led the Cougars to victory on Norse turf to keep Steel Canyon the owners of Hamisaw Road. He's at Southwestern College now. Can the Cougars still defend their stretch of pavement without him? The short answer, yes. The long answer, big yes, and the seniors made it happen. We have barely shown up to Valhalla when senior quarterback Nathan Barnett aired it to junior Chris Carter for the 7-0 lead. Senior back Kenneth Watson took it in at the goal line for another score to give the Cougars a 14-0 lead after the first quarter. In the second, sophomore running back Wesley Neely III had a mammoth run downfield to the goal line to set up Barnett's pass to senior wideout Matthew McGrade for the touchdown. The Cougars are now up by 3 scores, 21-0, and we weren't even done with the first half. Luckily for the Norsemen, they made it through the rain to the end of the first half without any more damage, and the Cougars led 21-0 at the half. That would be the final score as Lightning postponed the rest of the game. The final in this one, Steel Canyon 21, Valhalla nothing. The Hamisaw Trophy stays with Steel for another year. Up next, the Norsemen head to Lakeside to face El Capitan on Friday at 7 o'clock p.m. The Cougars head back to Steel Canyon with Hamisaw Road safely in hand and will host Grossmont on Friday at 7 o'clock p.m.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Liz Albert with an Aztecs men's soccer report. The last time we saw Aztecs men's soccer, they took a tough 2-1 loss from Washington last Sunday. Saturday night they were back in action looking for a better result against 7-4 UCLA. Good chances for the Aztecs were all over the first half, but they couldn't capitalize, and in the second half, the Bruins broke the tie. We were 31 seconds in when true freshman Frankie Amaya put it past redshirt junior Aztec goaltender Max Watkin to give the Bruins a 1-0 lead. But the Aztecs kept picking and picking away, and Adam Vargas made it pay off. The redshirt junior lined the shot in the 71st minute for the equalizer, his first as an Aztec, and we were knotted at 1-1. It was enough to send us to extra time. It took until the 8th minute of extra time for the Bruins to break through. Senior Damian Herman was ruled offside, and the Bruins hurried back to the other end of the pitch, where true freshman Cody Sundquist scored on a rebound past the sliding Watkin to net the golden goal for the Bruins, who would win 2-1. The Aztecs fall to below 500 to 5-6-1 and 1-4 in the Pac-12. Up next, the Aztecs travel across town on Friday to take on USD. First half is at 7 o'clock p.m.
Jeanette Craig, a retiree and grandmother from Santee, has been seriously injured while vacationing in Lesotho, an African nation, where a tour bus overturned. 3 people were killed and 12 were injured. Craig suffered a fractured pelvis and leg, as well as torn ligaments. Her friend Nicholas Wiseman says regular airlines will not transport her because of the severity of her injuries. The cost of the flight is estimated at $160,000. While Jeanette has travel insurance, it will not cover those costs. Insurance covered only a helicopter flight to a clinic near Lesotho, where she has undergone several surgeries. Her family wants to bring her back to San Diego to undergo an MRI and other tests, but because of her condition, she can only travel lying down on a specially equipped medical airplane. Wiseman has started a GoFundMe page to help Jeanette Craig return home. The site includes a video made by Jeanette from her hospital bed where she tearfully describes her intense pain. Her daughter-in-law, Tamira Baca Craig, told 10 News that her mother is suffering severe breakthrough pain every time she shifts because her pelvis is bone on bone. Stephanie Young, a family friend, posted on Facebook, "We never know when adventure is going to take a wrong turn." She urges travelers to check on their travel insurance coverage and urges the community to please donate to help bring Jeanette Craig home. Jeanette's daughter, Kylie, has flown to South Africa to be with her mother, leaving her job and family, and that's put a financial strain on her household, too. You can make a donation to help Jeanette Craig come home at the Jeanette Craig Emergency page on GoFundMe.com. Reporting for EastCountyMagazine.org, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with some good news for ratepayers in the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. The district directors have unanimously approved freezing water rates for fiscal year 2019. Board President Bill Pomering says we have a unique opportunity this year to provide some rate relief to our customers while still achieving all of the district's goals. Our water operation fund balances are strong due to higher than budgeted water sales last year, making the choice to forgo a previously approved water rate increase for this year the best decision for our customers, he says. A water rate hike had previously been approved as part of the district's five-year business plan and budget, but a rebound in water sales after the drought, including water sales for new housing developments and a new agreement signed with Sequan, have changed that outlook. A new analysis shows the increase in water sales will offset any losses of revenues from not raising rates. The Padre Dam Water District serves 100,000 residents in East County communities, including Santee, El Cajon, Lakeside, Flint Springs, Harbison Canyon, Blossom Valley, Alpine, Dehesa, and Crest.
This is John Fister with a health report. Valley fever is on the rise in California. This year may be the worst ever, and climate change is contributing to spread the potentially deadly virus, CalMatters reports. In 2016, California had more than 6,000 valley fever cases reported. In 2017, that number jumped by more than a third to over 8,100 cases. Valley fever season starts this month. Most cases surface between September and November, but through August this year, more than 5,000 cases have already been reported in California, putting the state on a pace for a new record. Ian McCarty, co-director of the Center for Valley Fever at the University of California, Davis, says the increase in cases over the last 2 years is striking. It's a catastrophic change, he says, and it's getting worse. The fungus typically infects the lungs after spores are inhaled, producing a persistent cough and chest pain or other flu-like symptoms that can require months of treatment. It can be hard to diagnose because it can mimic those of other ailments, and in many people, symptoms fade away on their own. But in other patients, it spreads. Rob Purdy caught valley fever back in 2012 from an airborne soil fungus that gave him meningitis, a swelling of the membranes lining the brain and spinal cord. Pain in his head has been intense. Purdy has a reservoir surgically built into his skull and must spend one full day each month with antifungal drugs pumping directly into his brain. It sounds horrible, and it is, Purdy says, yet considers himself lucky to be alive. Governor Jerry Brown this month signed three bills into law to help combat valley fever. The current state budget includes $8 million for research and education to keep more Californians from catching the infection and improve diagnosis so that symptoms can be treated accurately. But despite the state response, experts say the disease likely will continue to expand, with more people getting it in more areas of the state. One big reason, McCarty said, is climate change. A growing number of dust storms in California have spread the fungal spores far beyond the Central Valley, where the infections traditionally have been concentrated. McCarty says we know there is a direct correlation between these dust storms and valley fever, and we know climate change is increasing the extreme weather patterns here, including the dust storms, he said. Valley fever is no longer strictly a valley phenomenon. It has become more common across the state, even in coastal areas. That has people concerned in places like Lakeside's El Monte Valley, where a sand mine is proposed. Valley fever spores are known to exist in the valley, where some local residents say they have contracted the disease. Disrupting the soils through mining could spread valley fever spores into the air and sicken residents. Potentially, sand contaminated with valley fever could be spread to other locations, where the sand would be used for roadway construction. Democratic Assemblyman Rudy Salas, Jr., wrote the three valley fever bills the governor signed. He says the infection has been reported in 53 of California's 58 counties, and he has family members and friends who have contracted it. The state's health care costs have spiraled higher with the increase in infection, he notes. Because valley fever can resemble the flu, many physicians outside of the Central Valley don't consider it in their diagnoses, even though the blood test to identify it is inexpensive and simple. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimated there are about 150,000 undiagnosed cases a year, and McCarty says he thinks the number is higher. The most dangerous manifestation is meningitis, he said, and by the time patients go to the hospital, it's too late, so many people may die without ever being diagnosed, McCarty suspects. The California Department of Public Health doesn't regularly track deaths from valley fever, but it did compile statistics in one study. Officials concluded that 1,098 people died of the disease in California from 2000 to 2013, averaging about 73 deaths a year statewide. But fortunately, early diagnosis and treatment can save many patients.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. The legal settlement between the Grossmont Union High School District and the Alpine Union High School District to end a lawsuit over an Alpine high school contained a non-disparagement clause that has effectively muzzled Alpine education leaders and concerned parents from criticizing the Grossmont board. The gag order prohibits the Alpine District, as well as the Alpine Taxpayers for Bond Accountability and all of its members, from disparaging Grossmont's current or former board members, superintendent, or officers for their decision not to build a high school in Alpine or their decisions to use Prop H and Prop U bond monies for other projects, despite bond language that led voters to believe the school was a priority. Courts ruled in favor of Grossmont, which had argued that an enrollment trigger had not been met. Did the gag order prevent people from Alpine from running for the Grossmont School Board? Alpine residents had been fighting for two decades to get a high school and twice voted for bond measures to build it. Redistricting gave representation of Alpine to Grossmont trustee Jim Kelly, who fiercely opposed funding to construct a high school for Alpine. There was large community turnout at many hearings where crowds of concerned Alpine residents spoke out in favor of a high school, and yet Kelly wound up running unopposed. Was it because the people with the most institutional knowledge, expertise, and passion for an Alpine high school were silenced by the settlement? The gag order came to light this week after Lou Russo, a candidate running for the Alpine School Board, sent our media outlet an email criticizing Alpine Taxpayers member George Barnett for a post on social media criticizing Grossmont over the high school issue, which Russo says violates that non-disclosure clause. The online post by Barnett came in response to a comment from a resident in a discussion about an aquatic complex. The resident wrote that Alpine's board, quote, really screwed children over, after which she called for a change in school funding and endorsed Russo. Barnett, who is also president of the Alpine Education Association, posted in reply to the resident, you've got it backwards, perhaps. The screwing over that Alpine kids got was from the Grossmont Union High School District Board that now won't build the high school after it was voter-approved and funded, he added. Barnett later apologized and removed the comment, stating he recognizes that the Grossmont board does have the right to make decisions on how to spend its bond money. He later told East County Magazine that Grossmont now has the Alpine High School listed on a long list of possible projects 20 years from now, long after the children of those who've long fought for the school will be grown and graduated. Alpine had little choice but to sign the settlement, having also lost a unification proposal that sought to break the Alpine District away from Grossmont and allow it to build the high school, a plan that fell apart when Alpine lost its legal bid to have a portion of bond monies transferred from Grossmont to Alpine for the high school. The settlement lessened the financial liability of the Alpine District to pay Grossmont's legal fees, but at a high cost to the community, denying the rights of many of those most involved in the fight for an Alpine high school to speak out on the issue. It also effectively prevents many leading education voices who have long advocated for an Alpine high school from running for either school board, since it would be difficult to run to represent Alpine without answering voters' questions on this vital topic, nor avoid criticizing an opponent who undermined efforts to bring a high school to Alpine. Meanwhile, candidates with opposing views apparently have free rein to speak their mind, preventing voters from hearing a range of views on a topic near and dear to the hearts of parents, teachers, and students here in Alpine.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.